Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast, our second from Perth covering the Western Australian election. And today we're sitting on the veranda of the home of Kim Beazley in the suburb of South Perth on a beautiful morning with some bird noises in the background. Kim Beazley, you're lending your weight to Labor in this campaign with an appeal for people to donate $10. Do you think that they're investing in a certainty?
I think they're investing in a good chance. I think there's a very good chance the Labor Party will win this election. It is not easy for the Labor Party to win in Western Australia. You have to go to the sociology of things. If you look at the capital city's distribution of blue-collar working-class voters, in Adelaide, Melbourne and Sydney, the percentage is 48. In Brisbane, it's 36. In Perth, it's 22. So the Labor Party always has to fight sociology to win state elections. But I think they're about to win one against the sociological break.
If Labor does win, will it be at all inhibited in government by the upper house?
Quite possibly. That, by the way, is a tradition in this state whenever there is a Labor government. Previously, the upper house has been gerrymandered or malapportioned to blazes. It's malapportioned now, but not to blazes. So there's a chance that they'll get pretty close to an upper house majority and able to pass bills using crossbenchers as opposed to the good officers of the opposition. In past years, it's been the good officers of the opposition that has enabled them to govern in the lower house. So that's something to watch, but it won't be worth watching on the night because you're not going to know the outcome of that for a couple of weeks.
Now, I want particularly to talk to you about One Nation because you were federal Labor leader in the time of Pauline Hanson, Mark One. What do you see as the similarities and the differences with Mark Two?
Well, the similarities are there. One Nation still stands for the sorts of things which would damage our economy and security and the coherence of our society. That's not changed. Targets have changed, but that fact has not changed. So the rise of One Nation, to my mind, ought to be greeted in much the same way as we greeted it back then, to see it disappear as quickly as possible.
And the best way of doing that?
Well, the best way of doing that is not to put them in Parliament. And there seems to be a determination on the part of the current Liberal leadership here in Western Australia to put them in Parliament and then hope if they fall over the line as a result of that to govern effectively with the One Nation representatives on the crossbenches in the upper house, not the National Party.
Do you think that the appeal of Pauline Hanson is stronger these days than it was a couple of decades ago?
Well, yes and no. The appeal of that populist proposition has always been there, and actually when she arose previously, we were much closer to the era when that populist proposition represented a large number of Australians, and opinions that accompany it were in bits and pieces in the policies of the major parties. Now, we're now further, and that is less so, but she is getting more encouragement from the right now than she got then. And the consequence is I think she'll do better now than she did then.
Does she have a particular appeal in this state because it's going through an economic transition after the mining boom's finished and that's hitting many people?
Again, yes and no. Yes, obviously from the polls that is the case. But this has not been a protectionist state. This has not been a state that has ever benefited from high tariff walls. In fact, just the opposite. It has meant that basically there's been a massive trade imbalance between the east coast of Australia and the west coast. You know, on the external account, for example, there's a 9-to-1 balance in favour of Western Australia. We are the exporting state. But on the local balance, there's a 9-to-1 imbalance in favour of the eastern states. And that's basically because the eastern states has the lion's share of industry, which produces product that West Australians need. So you've never had here quite the strength of concern about the removal of protection as you've had in the East. So here, I suspect the appeal is the populist appeal is more ethnic than would be the case, and less economic. However, there's certainly an economic component there. So even though this state has always been disadvantaged by the old protectionist regime, there are still some people who are benighted enough to think it helps.
Well, what about this ethnic appeal? Because Pauline Hanson this week was again questioning Muslim immigration presence, even in the community, saying that they'd changed suburbs. How does that message resonate with people here in Western Australia?
It resonates with some, but not with others. We are probably more conscious of Southeast Asia. We do more trade with Southeast Asia.
Conscious in a positive way?
And with Indonesia, for example. There's a strong propensity here to look very seriously at Indonesia. Lots of West Australians holiday in Indonesia. And the simple fact of the matter is the positions that she is adopting pose to seriously damage a critical security and economic relationship. I think quite a lot of West Australians understand that. One thing I can guarantee you on election day, she's not going to be polling 51% of the vote.
Well, that's right. But what we've seen recently, I guess, is on the conservative side of politics, she's been greeted with the line that she's more... her party's more sophisticated these days, that she's more pragmatic. But you've said that it's very important that the mainstream parties don't let her into parliament. Essentially, that's your message, right? But if parties are too dismissive of her, if Labor is too dismissive of her, will some voters react to that?
We have to be resolutely opposed. My experience was as leader, and I think it still applies now, that a lot of loyal Labor voters or a lot of Labor trending voters take leads from the party. If the party says that a vote for another particular party is going to do extreme damage to them, quite a lot will take notice of it. Some won't, but quite a lot will. But if you play footsie with it, quite a lot more will not take notice of it, and her vote will be, which is now largely coming from the Liberal Party and the National Party, big time from the National Party, will start to come from us.
What about how she should be handled in the Senate? Because here both sides are trying to garner votes for positions or opposition to legislation or whatever. How should Labor be handling her there?
Look, her position in the Senate is entirely a product of the foolishness of the Federal Liberal Party.
With the double dissolution?
Both with the double dissolution and the changes they made in Senate voting practices, voting methods. If they had left it as it was, in all probability, she would have only had one seat, hers. And those who've accompanied her and given her the influence that she has in the federal parliament would not be there, or maybe at best one of them. So she is a creation of the Liberal Party breaking what has been, since the days in which I was responsible for the reformation of Australian voting rules in 1984, we did that on the basis that when we did anything big, we did it with our opponents. Well, they didn't do that. They breached that. They did it with the Greens. And the consequence of that is disastrous. And they augmented the disaster by doing the double dissolution. So they are entirely responsible for most of the actual parliamentary heft, as opposed to the voting heft that she now has. But if you've got parliamentary heft, you can translate that down the line into voting heft. So I hold the Federal Liberal Party largely responsible for what we now have to handle. They are in the position, having created the monster, they actually have to deal with the monster, otherwise they can't get anything through the Australian Senate, and that is massively to her advantage.
Just to go down a bit of a byway, as you mentioned, those 84 changes that you shepherded, they did make it harder for any government to get a majority in the Senate. That's been the effect. Do you have any regrets about any of that?
No, it wasn't the voting changes that did that, actually. It was the increase in the size of the parliament.
Well, that happened at the same time.
Same time, yeah. Yeah, and but the parliament needed to be increased. I mean, if we could have gone to with the nexus that applies constitutionally, which obliges the House to be no more than twice the size of the Senate, we didn't need to go ridiculous by adding four senators from each state as opposed to two. But had we added four senators from each state, then it would not actually have created that sort of problem. The fact that we did two, so the best that a political party could really hope for was three of the six in a half Senate election, and very, very outside chance of seven of 12 in a double dissolution. Then the government in the Senate would not have been so reliant on crossbench parties. But it was a question of the degree, really. We needed a bigger House of Representatives, and that, with the nexus not having been broken, was the only way we could achieve it.
So looking back with what you know now on that period when you were minister, looking after electoral things, would you have done it differently, or do you think that on balance it was the advantages outweigh the disadvantages?
It was going okay until you decided to change the basis of the Senate vote. And that produced the situation that we now have. Had we had the old Senate vote at the last election, even with a double dissolution, you still would have got back a Senate dominated by crossbench parties, but the One Nation component of it simply would not have been as big.
Now, you had a long stint as Australia's ambassador in Washington, so I can't finish without asking you about how you read the early days of Donald Trump's presidency.
Well, looked at from an Australian point of view, we're actually seeing exposed to us the sort of basis of the Australian-American relationship, that it is not leader-dependent, it is now functional. It's become so broad-based, both militarily and economically, that it largely functions outside, if you like, the gift of political leaders. So for a political leader like Donald Trump to have a major impact on its structure would require him to deliberately single out Australia and do what he could to damage us. That's not going to happen. So from that point of view, that's from that sort of functional alliance point of view, Trump doesn't have a great deal of impact. In terms of the good regard of the United States in the region around us, he's had a massive impact. And the impact is augmented by the fact that Obama was very popular in the region around us. And the American position in soft power terms was extremely strong. Now it is much weaker and with a lot of question marks over it, with serious problems capable of emerging in Korea and possibly in the South China Seas, and probably more significantly, possibly in trade relationships between the United States and China, all of which could have a major impact upon us. It has to be said, to this point, not a huge amount, but we're in very early days. Trump's administration is in very early days. We don't know how effective it's going to be. I rather suspect that as time goes by, the Republican congressional leadership will largely assume the control of the situation. So what Trump will get through will be what they want, not what he wants. Where they coincide, like on selections of Supreme Court justices, from that point of view, it'll be fine. On things like building the capital for building huge walls on the Mexican border, I suspect not at all. And in terms of a large infrastructure program, beyond tax cuts and credits associated with it, not much. And the Republicans are in agreement with him on defence proposals and on cuts to the tax arrangements for upper income earners and businesses. But they'll be constrained by the fact that within the Republican congressional delegation lies a lot of fairly harsh critics of unbalanced budgets and major capital spending. And I suspect that as the 4 years of Trump goes by, he will be more constrained by the Republicans than by just about anything else. But this is a guy who can go off the wall very quickly. And having said that, you've got to say, expect the unexpected.
So do you think this is a really dangerous period for America?
I think if you took the whole of the Trump agenda and tried to impose it, it could be very fraught indeed. But I think probably there's a lot of institutional restraint that he did not anticipate and which he is now experiencing, and which at this stage of his presidency he's not negotiating very well.
Well, certainly interesting times ahead there. Kim Beazley, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Terrific. Good to chat to you.
After talking with Kim Beazley, we went to Rockingham, south of Perth, which was in Kim Beazley's electorate when he was an MP and is in the electorate of opposition leader Mark McGowan. We found there some disillusionment with politics and some varied views about One Nation.
So how do you think it's going?
Yeah, I think it's a good chance Labour will get in.
Yes.
I don't think people want to see the Conservatives again for another term.
Why is that?
I think they've had their opportunities,
yeah,
and they've not really taken them, you know.
Yeah.
And we're very much in debt, and I don't believe in selling the power station, the power company.
How do you think One Nation's going?
I think they'll get considerable amount of voters, but I don't really believe in what they believe in myself. But they have got they're getting very more popular,
yeah,
as it goes on.
Can I ask you how you're likely to vote?
I'm probably going to vote for Martin McGowan's party.
And are you normally a Labour voter?
No, I'm normally a Conservative voter.
And what do you do?
I'm retired now.
Thank you for talking with us. So how's it going?
Going good, thank you.
And who do you think is going to win?
Labour.
Right, and why is that?
Well, Rockingham's typically a Labour stronghold, yes, and I think a lot of people are dissatisfied with the present government.
Are you a Labour voter?
Sometimes I am.
This time?
I'm thinking either the Labour or the Greens at the moment.
Right. How do you think One Nation will go?
At first I thought it might go well because a lot of people secretly agree with everything Pauline Hanson's saying, but now she's made the deal, I'm not sure how it'll go.
And could I just ask what you do?
I'm retired.
Right. Okay, thank you so much for talking with us. So how do you think the election's going?
I'll be glad when it's over.
Yeah, why is that?
Because you hear the same stuff on the TV,
yeah,
and the radio, yeah, day in and day out.
Yeah. And who do you think is going to win?
Oh, well, I hope Mark McGowan.
Right. And you'll be supporting him?
Yeah. 100%.
Are you normally a Labour voter?
Yeah.
And how do you think One Nation's been received?
Not very good. Not very good at all. She's too imposing on WA, I think. Pauline Hanson.
She's an outsider, you mean?
Yeah. And she's demanding too much of our people over here.
Right, in what way?
Well, reading this morning's paper, she doesn't want to support giving any GST from Queensland to Western Australia. So there's something like that.
Could I ask what you do?
I'm a retired chef.
All right. Thank you very much for talking.
Thanks so much.
All I really know about the election right now is all the little pop-ups I see on the side of the road. I haven't done my research into it as of yet.
Do you have an opinion on who's going to win?
No.
And
I know, it's very irresponsible of me.
And so you haven't made up your mind how to vote yet?
I haven't, no.
What do you think, any particular issues striking you?
I don't think that any of the issues are actually in our control, regardless of who we vote for. They're going to make their decisions, they're going to change if they want to change. I don't think that Australia's really got a very set in stone way of being right now. You can elect somebody, and this is going as high up as the Prime Minister nowadays, and they will change. They just I know it's not as simple as that, and there's other things that go into it, but I don't think that it's...
So are you a bit disillusioned with politics at the moment?
Yeah, I don't think that our vote really means anything right now, because we might vote for somebody and then somebody else is in.
And what about One Nation? How do you think they are seen in this area?
I don't know.
Pauline Hanson.
I don't want to comment about that. I'm trying to live a more racist-free life. We live in a mixed family of our own. However, I have preconceptions about maybe agreeing with Pauline Hanson in certain ways and maybe not in certain ways. She's a very extreme, and unfortunately, I don't think that people take her seriously because of how extreme she comes across with her views.
And what do you do?
It's not fair. Me? Yes. Right now I'm a homemaker. I have two children, one with a disability, and I'm pregnant with my third. But I previously was a store manager.
Thanks for talking with
us. No worries. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. So how's the campaign going?
I'm really not too sure. I haven't been keeping up with it at all. I just basically go in and do my vote and get out of there as soon as I can, really.
Right. Do you know who support you?
Just from purely from my family and stuff like that, we are very Labor bound. My mother herself has worked for the Labor Party for the best part of, I think, 20 years. So, yeah, we're very much Labor based family, yeah.
How do you think One Nation's been received over here?
As I said, I'm really not too sure. I try not to concentrate too much on that sort of stuff. It seems like, no offence to people that, you know, follow it very closely, but it seems very negative to me. So I try to keep out of it as much as possible. One Nation, from what I've heard from people, they tend to, any comments that have been made have been positive. I haven't heard many people talk negative about it. But yeah, as I said, I'm probably not the best person to talk to about it.
Are people responding positively to Pauline Hanson herself?
Not to Pauline Hanson herself. They believe that Pauline Hanson does need to work on her... I'm not too sure if it's her personal opinions itself, but some of her legislations and stuff like that have been given positive thumbs up. But her attitude itself has been given a very down review from the people that I have spoken to.
And yes. Could I ask what you do?
I am a storeman at JB Hi-Fi.
Yes. Thank you very much.
No worries.
I work in the hospitality, so I'm not very happy with the penalty rates being cut. I don't know if that's going to come in or not, is it?
Do you think that will affect this election?
Probably not, because it's too close. Probably too close. But, I'm undecisive. I still don't know who I'm going to vote for yet. There's good and bad things with each party. So
who have you voted for in the past?
Labour. Oh, yes. I've always been Labour.
But you're undecided?
At the moment I am, yeah.
How do you think One Nation's being received?
Good and bad. Yeah, well, I kind of agree with it, but then some of it I'm not too sure. I'm not saying the racist thing. Some of it is slightly racist, but in a non-racist way. I'm not explaining that very well, am I? I can agree on both sides. Yeah, it's hard. So I really don't know who I'm going to go for yet. I have
would
to wait.
Would you consider voting for One Nation?
I would consider, yeah.
You've been impressed with Pauline Hanson's campaigning?
Some. I agree with some of her things and others not. I don't believe it should all be One Nation as such. I think it's a free country and everyone has the right to live here. I don't know. I'm probably the wrong person to ask. My views are different.
Well, you've got a couple of days to make up your mind.
Oh, gosh. When is it? This weekend?
It is.
Oh, God. I'm working this weekend. Okay. Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday.
All right. Oh, God. How can I forget?
Thank you for talking.
Thank you. I'm really angry with the amount of publicity that Pauline Hanson is getting. I don't think if the media stopped chasing her, saying that she'd disappear off the planet. I think that Colin Barnett is in serious trouble. And I think Mark McGowan saying as a new face will lift things up quite considerably.
And you support Labor?
Yes, I would. The main reason being is I think a new team, fresh visions, more energy to work.
And are you normally a Labor voter?
Actually, no. I've been a swinging voter. I voted Greens in the Senate in the last election, and I voted for an independent in the House of Reps.
And could I ask what you do?
Yes, I run my own business.
What sort of business is that?
I do kitchen and catering supplies. So I'm supplying equipment to a lot of the restaurants and cafes around the place, and they're seriously feeling the pinch with this lack of money out there in the economy.
Now, Pauline Hanson says she emphasises with small business.
No. All Pauline Hanson is, she wants to rattle the cage. First off, it was Aborigines. Now it's Muslims. It's purely and simply Pauline Hanson pushing Pauline Hanson and wanting to be in the spotlight.
Thank you very much for talking.
No problem at all. Nice to meet you.
William Bowe is a PhD candidate at the University of Western Australia who specialises in electoral behaviour and polling. And he's been watching One Nation, particularly during this WA election. William Bowe, can you give us a bit of an overview of the One Nation campaign, how they're operating?
The One Nation campaign has been a bit of a shambles, actually, and I guess the question in this election with respect to how well they're going to go is how much does that matter? I think given the sort of experience of Donald Trump's campaign last year, I think there's an idea that these sorts of populist movements can get away with a great deal. They're not sort of expected to be organised and efficient because people want to send them, you know, off to the capital city or wherever in order to sort of throw a bomb into the existing state of affairs. However, I think the problem that they have had is that they have entered this preference deal with the Liberal Party. This has generated a very great deal of publicity to the extent of, you know, really penetrating to not necessarily voters who are all that engaged in politics. And it has undermined that selling point they have as the alternative option to the establishment. There's a sort of vague sense among people who don't necessarily understand the specifics of preference deals, that they are not the independent force that they were, and that in some sense voting for them is lending your support to Colin Barnett, who is extremely unpopular with their potential support base.
So are you saying that the shine has come off them for those who'd be attracted to them during the course of the campaign?
To an extent, that's the sort of question, and at this stage, imponderable question, is the extent to which all of this penetrates. A lot of people, Pauline Hanson symbolises, you know, the rejection of multiculturalism for a lot of voters who are completely divorced from the sort of day-to-day argy-bargy of politics. This is also difficult to research from the perspective of polling and the party's own efforts to research the electorate. These are difficult voters to get hold of and find out what's going on in their heads. So internationally, we've seen a number of elections which have surprised because, you know, market research techniques, which have traditionally worked very well, have a bit of a blind spot with these sorts of voters. And as I've said, my own vague anecdotal impression is that this Liberal preference deal has really cut through to these sorts of voters. They are aware that it's happened. But on the other hand, that's a pretty ephemeral and quite narrow, shallow pool of anecdotal evidence that I have. It could be that the One Nation voters in their totality are still more than happy to vote for Pauline Hanson for what she symbolises.
Do you think that the times suit One Nation in Western Australia at the moment, with the economy in transition, with many people having come to struggle town, as it were, after the end of the mining boom, financial problems for the government and so on?
Well, you know, you might ordinarily look at all that and say that the times are suiting Labor. So the question
is... Well, they seem to be, according to the polls as well, but among minority parties.
Well, they're not suiting the government is the question. And, you know, I guess that means that there is a... Clearly, there's going the Liberal Party primary vote is going to be a lot lower this year than it was in 2013. And a certain proportion of those people are happy to swing to the other major party, but in the modern context, an increasing number are looking for other alternatives. So in that sense, absolutely it suits One Nation. The question is whether or not, as I've sort of mentioned, their shambles of a campaign undermines the extent to which they are able to harvest. That is open to question. There are a lot of other micro parties running. One of the phenomena we've seen in national politics recently is, micro parties collectively getting an extremely large share of the vote, in particular in upper house elections. That's a factor in the equation here. So it could be that we get, because One Nation have had these problems, there is still that anti-major party vote. It's not being harvested quite as much by One Nation as was being anticipated, and we're going to get up with a very eclectic mix of micro parties in the upper house.
So how well do you think One Nation's likely to do in the upper house?
My feeling has always been that they will win seats in each of the three non-metropolitan regions. The configuration in the upper house in Western Australia is that there are six-member regions. Three of them are metropolitan, three of them are non-metropolitan. Now, we've been here before. In 2001, One Nation, and interestingly on that occasion, they outperformed expectations. And they did exactly what I just said I'm anticipating on this occasion. They didn't have quite enough support to break through in the three metropolitan regions, but out in the country, their base was high enough to win them quotas. Quota is 14 to 15%. They're not doing as badly on preferences as they used to. Of course, they have ended this preference deal with the Liberals that people keep talking about. So they're not quite the pariah in terms of preferences that they were, and that means that a sort of base of the vote of around 10 to 11%, which is highly achievable for them outside Perth, will be enough to win them three seats. And in the context of this election, that could very well win them the balance of power in their own right, because my own reading of the situation is that the Liberal and National parties between them will fall just short of half the seats. Therefore, a complement of three seats would put them in an extremely strong position in the upper house.
If there was a change of government, as on the polls is seeming to be very likely, what would that mean for the new Labor government?
Well, it means, in one sense, it means that the Labor government in Western Australia will be in the very familiar position of having to deal with a difficult upper house. The upper house is still malapportioned. As I said, there is an even split of metropolitan and non-metropolitan members in the upper house, but about three quarters of the population lives in the metropolitan area. So that is an extremely difficult environment for Labor. Their support is concentrated in the metropolitan area. So institutionally, Labor are well and truly used to dealing with difficult upper houses. They didn't do quite so badly in the Gallic-Carpenter years from 2001 to 2008. But one way or another, they will be facing a broadly right-of-centre upper house. And it's going to be difficult for them. The balance of power holders, even if it isn't just One Nation in and of themselves, are unlikely to be natural allies for Labor. And it's very difficult to see, for example, Labor plus the Greens constituting a majority in the upper house.
Pauline Hanson is here for the final week. She's out in the regions campaigning. How is she regarded as a political figure? Do you think that her image has changed since earlier times?
I don't really think that it has. She's polarising. People who like her love her a lot. There's a large class of people to whom who are hostile towards her. But as a minor party player, that needn't bother her too much. She just needs to secure a sufficient, proportion of the overall vote in order to, get quotas in the upper house. And, she is extremely popular out on the campaign trail. Whenever she goes out to shopping malls, people are really enthusiastic towards her. And she has a kind of star quality which is lacking in state politics especially. And as you say, she's here for the final week of the campaign. I think this is a really dynamic factor in the campaign. A lot of the media coverage in the final week is focused on her, almost to the exclusion of the two major party leaders. And this, I think, was always the ace up One Nation sleeve. They have not had a good campaign, but notwithstanding that fact all these sorts of controversies they've had with their candidates, with quarrels within the party over the Liberal preference deal, could potentially all get blown away by that avalanche of publicity that Pauline Hanson is able to generate simply by showing up. And as you say, she's touring the regions. That's going to be a major event in the regions, Pauline Hanson coming to town. And it really is an unpredictable factor in the final week of the campaign.
And her extreme statements don't detract from her presence?
I think, however, in qualification to what I've just said, that she has been imprudent in raising issues like vaccination, in expressing approval for Vladimir Putin. Clearly, she's following the kind of... She's very taken with the example of Donald Trump, I think overly so. I think she ought to be tailoring her own phenomenon that she has here to Australian circumstances, and I don't think she's doing that. She's over-impressed by the example that she perceives Donald Trump as having set for her. So I think talking about Vladimir Putin was extremely ill-advised. And now that she is, as I say, here in the final week and dominating media coverage, it's not just a question of television news showing fawning crowds, you know, thronging around her in shopping malls. She is being asked tough questions. She doesn't perform well in response to those questions. And the avalanche of free publicity she's getting in the final week of the campaign is not the unmixed blessing that it might have been if she'd played a more prudent game.
William Bowe, thank you very much for talking with us.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
One of the tension points in this campaign has been on the Conservative side of politics between the Liberals and Nationals over the Liberals' preference deal with One Nation. We have with us Dexter Davies, who's Senior Federal Vice President of the Nationals, a former WA MP, and incidentally the father of a Nationals minister, Mia Davies. Dexter Davies, to start with this vexed preference deal, how much of a shock was that to the Nationals?
Well, it's not really a concern of ours, other than we've normally supported each other in either coalition or, in this case, an alliance over the last period of time in government. It's an issue for the Liberal Party and One Nation. Our view is that the Nationals WA is about what its policies are and what's good for regional WA. If other parties choose to go down different lines, that's their business, and we choose not to comment on that.
But the Nationals did seem very cross at the time.
The repercussions are that it may influence some positions in the upper house. But as I said, we can't influence what happens in other parties. We like our independence, and we back ourselves to do what we think's right for regional WA. And I suppose we've got to respect other parties to make their decisions for whatever reason they may be. We feel that it may have cost One Nation and the Liberal Party primary votes because it's very unpopular.
But when you've been in alliance, it's a bit rough, isn't it, if it costs you seats?
Well, whatever will be. We'll see on Saturday. Our vote has gone up consistently over the last four elections, and we predict that the National Party vote will be higher again at this election.
How has the alliance gone?
The alliance has been, in our view, a very, very good government that's delivered massive infrastructure programs right across WA, and especially the Royalties for Regions program, which was the signature National Party policy, which has delivered $6.9 billion worth of projects across regional WA in the last 8 years. And on top of that, there's been marvellous infrastructure projects in the metropolitan area as well. We've worked very well and delivered very good government through some very difficult times, and we find ourselves now in an economic cycle that's the downside at the end of two terms of government, but we feel confident that with the policies that we put forward and our focus on what the Nationals pride themselves in is dealing with opportunity for regional Western Australians, we think that we're in a good position to put our best foot forward on Saturday.
Now, in the East, I guess we keep hearing how the Nationals in the West are different from the Nationals in other parts of the country. As a senior federal vice president and a prominent Western Australian National, you obviously get both sides of this. Just explain to us how the Nationals here are different.
Well, we're in an alliance, so we're not a coalition partner. And they made that decision, the Nationals in WA, leading into the 2008 election, and that's stood them in good stead since then. It works well for us here. We don't purport to tell people in Queensland how they should structure their party, or in New South Wales or Victoria. We think that the best way possible for us to deliver for regional WA, given the structures that are here, is in an alliance, and that served us very well. It's delivered royalties for regions, which is the envy of every regional government and probably every government in Australia. We think that that's been worked well for us. It may not work well for other people in other states.
You're a fairly bolshy party, though, aren't you, here?
People might say that about us. We think we're very constructive, but we've got a very strong focus. And I think if you haven't got a strong focus and you aren't true to your word, I think the voting public will feel that from about 1,000 paces. We set our goals on royalties for regions and the balance of power. And you've got to remember, when this government came in, that all the pundits from all sides predicted the demise of the National Party in WA, and it had never happened. It was a stupid idea. Bit similar to the criticism that Brendan's getting now about his resource rent tax. Very similar. In fact, it sounds like an echo. You won't find a commentator, a politician, that'll criticise royalties for regions at the moment, yet they all thought that it was a silly idea last time around.
Well, this tax that he's proposing, it's on Rio and BHP, and the companies are screaming about that. It's quite a radical proposal to be putting up at this time.
We don't think so. We think that every person and ratepayer and that in Western Australia, mum and dad and grandfather and single mums, rates and taxes have gone up with CPI or greater than CPI every year from long before 1960. And they've been paying their way well and truly. The Legacy State Agreement Acts, which apply to Rio and BHP, only those two station companies, have given them enormous advantages to dig up West Australians' iron ore and make, at the moment, record profits, record production. And we think that it's unreasonable that there's a resource rent that was set in 1960 against never expecting to reach these heights, and they're still paying that when all the mums and dads and the grandparents and pensioners have a CPI, especially in the environment where our share of GST is 30 cents of every dollar that we send to Canberra. We're in a situation in WA where there's a considerable debt that's going out because of infrastructure spend and the very, very high cost of providing all the services that were required to allow those two companies to get to record profit-making circumstances. All the services had to be paid, the teachers had to be provided, that... we are now in a situation where that debt needs to be paid off. The mums and dads are paying their fair share. They get a CPI increase at least, if not more, on all their charges every year. We think, since 1960, it'd be fair that the two most powerful and highest profit-earning companies, whose 80% of their shareholders are overseas, could increase their resource rent tax and pay their fair share.
I just wonder, on Sunday, after all this campaigning is over, how the Nationals and the Liberals will be getting on. What do you think that
the attitude will be, firstly, if there's a loss, and secondly, if the Barnett government scrapes home, which would have to be, I think, with the National Party's help in terms of seats.
You would assume so, and we're approaching Saturday to win and deliver what we prosecute our argument to the last day. That's what we set about to do. We set that target 12 months ago. Everybody's been very clear on what the National Party's position's been. It hasn't wavered one little bit. And we've explained it from one end of the state to the other. Yes, the mining companies and the CME have waged one of the biggest, most concentrated, expensive campaigns against an individual that you've ever seen. I haven't heard them raise a whisper against the GST, which is a far bigger problem, and the CME say, oh, well, it's a policy issue. Well, I wonder if they think the GST's a policy issue in Western Australia. It's rubbish, their opposition to what we've done. It's self-interest, and it's ill-advised. But never mind, that's their choice. We prosecuted our argument. They're defending their position so they don't have to pay the tax. You wouldn't expect anything else. Our job is to make sure that everybody pays their fair share and that we can continue to deliver expanding infrastructure projects in Western Australia to allow ourselves the opportunity to generate income, pay off debt, and create a wonderful place for all West Australians to live.
And the mood on the conservative side of politics after it's all over?
After it's all over, hopefully with a win, we'll push ahead and prosecute our argument that we've got a mandate to do what we've put forward, and that negotiation will take place next week, obviously, and we'll prosecute that argument as solidly as we
possibly
can. And
you get that tax in?
Our absolute intention is to get that tax in, because whoever wins, and this is not very difficult arithmetic or economics, if you've got a debt and a going towards $40 billion and projected deficit budgets, and if you have deficit budgets, you actually don't pay much debt off, your government, whoever it is, needs to find another source of revenue. Now, the Labor government and One Nation especially have not put forward a proposition of raising extra revenue. They're going to cut public service for $20 million. The interest rate will go up by more than $20 million on the debt that's already there. You have to find more revenue to pay the bills. You can't keep on taxing the grandmothers and the grandfathers and the mums and dads and the pensioners out of existence. The place you can go to is the two most profitable companies in West Australia, who are digging up West Australian assets and are paying the same rates on those on that West Australian product as they were in 1960. So we think that prosecuting that argument to find the revenue, nobody else has put a proposition forward. If somebody comes with another proposition to say that, now, the irony of all this is that the Liberal Party have chosen to preference One Nation. And if they get the balance of power in the upper house, One Nation have vowed not to allow the sale of Western Power. So there goes the Liberal Party's source of revenue. The revenue will have to come from somewhere, because you do have to pay your bills.
Could you get this tax in, do you think, via a Labor government, if there is a Labor government?
No, we won't be able to, because if there's a Labor government, they'll have a majority and they'll be able to make decisions in their
yes,
own right.
Yes, but I mean, could you persuade a Labor government that this was a sensible
policy? We will
policy?
Continue to prosecute our argument that this tax is a right and fair tax, and the revenue will have to come from somewhere. If Labor come to that realisation, or whoever's in government comes to that realisation, because they're going to have to get the revenue from somewhere.
Just finally, on One Nation, they could, very likely will, take seats from you in the upper house. Do you think nationally, putting on your national hat, do you think One Nation is a real danger to the National Party in other places?
Not for me. I think in Queensland, I think there's a stronger movement. We find it a bit unusual that we have a fly-in, fly-out senator from Queensland coming over here leading the charge on behalf of West Australians when it's one thing that we actually can't stand, having eastern staters tell us what to do, especially when they've got no plan to do that. The issue is that the media's been very interested in Pauline Hanson. There's been very little in-depth analysis of her policies. It has been a bit of a pop star atmosphere, which annoys everybody else. We've preferred to try and concentrate on prosecuting our argument and what's important, which is raising the tax, having a plan to pay off debt and providing opportunities for Western Australians. We haven't got time and we haven't got the money to do anything else. So that's what we're about. I think that maybe there's a 10% vote out there that's been indicated for, you know, people like Clive Palmer and One Nation before. We think that our, in WA, the National Party's vote has gone up at every election for the last four elections, and we expect it to go up again this time. We don't expect to lose seats to One Nation. We think the votes will come from across the board.
Ron Boswell, a former Queensland senator, has warned that One Nation really has to be fought quite aggressively. Now, he's talking, of course, about Queensland in particular, mm-hmm. but is that your view nationally?
We've stood very strongly for what we believe in. We believe that we're the party to deliver for the regional Western Australia. We believe that we provide good government in partnership, in alliance with the Liberals, and in doing that we would take that space, and we believe that we provide a much better alternative than One Nation.
Dexter Davies, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from our second Conversation Politics podcast from the West. We'll have another one for you tomorrow. Thanks to my producer, Pat Hutchins. I'm Michelle Grattan. Goodbye for now.